Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and each week on this program, I investigate the changing world we're living in, how we're accessing more information, how we're learning more about ourselves. Tonight's guest is very much a part of this evolution and revolution of spirit, and through her particular modality of face reading, her name is Jean Hainer. Thanks, Jean, for being here.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure.
Is that how you say your last name, you said, Hainer?
Yeah.
H-A, how do you spell it?
H-A-N-E-R.
Right, and she's written a book called The Wisdom of the Face, which is Chinese diagnosis of the face, and not just diagnosis. You really can tell actually everything there is about a person by looking at their face, right?
That's right.
I mean, you could tell their physical health for sure, because that's what they teach in Chinese medicine, but you can also tell their emotional tendencies and their spiritual potentials.
Well, yeah, and you're right. Face reading actually evolved as Chinese medicine did. It's actually an ancient branch of Chinese medicine, and it was first used as a diagnostic tool. In Chinese medicine, they diagnose by observation, and what they're looking for is patterns, all kinds of patterns in people's health and lifestyle and emotional nature. And they came to notice that there were patterns of features and markings on people's faces that correlated to certain kinds of diseases and the tendency for the body to behave in a certain way. And so at first it was a diagnostic tool, but they soon came to recognize that these same patterns of information gave them very profound information about someone's inner nature, what their personality was, what they needed to be happy in life. So out of that came what I do, which is not facial diagnosis for health issues, but called face reading. And thousands of years ago, face readers in China were the original personal coaches and therapists. They were the ones that we went to for guidance in career and relationships and life paths.
But does everyone have the potential to be happy? I mean, some people's destinies, not always the highest ideal, according to what you see in the face.
Yeah, well, you know, you look around and you see mostly unhappy people in the world, so it does seem like that. You know, the foundation, the principles of Chinese medicine is that everything always changes. So there's no such thing as destiny carved in stone. It's you know, as we go through life, we make choices, we react to our experiences, we develop belief patterns, and these kind of set up a life experience. It's kind of like a story that we're telling ourselves that just creates more of the same. But the way that I look at it and the way that Chinese face reading looks at it is that we're each born with a unique inner blueprint. And, you know, if you're building a house, you pay attention to the blueprint. If you follow the blueprint, the house will stand strong, it will function well, it will last for a long time. Well, imagine if you had access to your blueprint, you would be creating a life in alignment with that inner pattern, that inner destiny, so to speak. Rather than flailing around and trying this or that and you know, often journeying away from who you're meant to be without even knowing it, doing the best that we can. So your face can give you really important messages about who you really are and the best kind of life that you can create for yourself so that you do achieve happiness.
Well, I studied Chinese medicine. Actually, I studied acupuncture and herbology.
Right.
And then they took this course called Nourishing Destiny, and they said that the lowest form of medicine is to make someone better. And the next form is to keep people well. And they said the highest form of medicine is to connect people to their destiny.
And I would insert the word spirit for destiny.
Because
what I really see as the highest level of health is if we're being our true spirits, if we're being true to ourselves. We only experience bad health because we're out of balance, we're out of alignment, we're not being true to who we really are.
But how do we know who we really are?
Yeah, that's the $64,000 question, yeah. Well, you know, my theory is that, you know, we're all born with this inner blueprint, fully intact, we're all bright and shiny, we arrive raring to go, and soon after we're born, we start receiving messages from parents and family and the outside world. and judgments and expectations about who we're supposed to be that don't always match who we are. And, you know, we just got here. We don't know the rules. And the implicit message that we're getting over and over again is you will be loved if you're like that, not this. And we want to be loved, so we try to be more like that and not this. And that starts the journey away from original nature. And then we get lost. And then we wonder why we have stress and why we're not happy. It's you know, all, many, many routes back to return to original nature. But face reading is, to me, is the most simple and fascinating and profound way to do it. I often have people in my workshops, you know, burst into tears saying this is the first time in their lives they feel like they have permission to be who they are.
Well, how's that work? I mean, how do you get people to realize that?
You know, it's not that hard. You can learn to read very easily, actually, what each feature of your face is saying, and it explains to you why you've always felt a yearning toward this kind of career or an attraction to that kind of person, or why you struggle with certain patterns of emotion that, you know, perhaps you don't see friends struggling with. The beauty of Chinese medicine is that they did develop such a sophisticated understanding of patterns. And originally it was about observing patterns in nature that led them into this science. But amazingly, human beings are part of nature too. And so we can apply this very developed knowledge to understanding our own patterns. And rather than doing what we usually do, which is going into self-judgment, which is thinking that we're doing something wrong that has to be fixed, we can really transform that experience and start to see ourselves as perfect and beautiful, but we've been expressing who we are in stressed or negative ways because we've never been supported in understanding and we've navigated off course. And it's really not that hard to return back to center and start to express who you really are in positive and powerful ways.
Well, we can go into some of the specifics. I mean, when I saw you, and was that about 2 or 3 years ago?
Yeah.
You gave me a great face reading, but you also was reading the face of this person, this assistant I had, and you said he had bushy eyebrows and he had a tendency towards anger and expressing anger, which is true. Now, knowing that about himself, then he could then modify that behavior. How does knowing that help?
Yeah. Well, that's a really good question because, you know, this brings me to a kind of talking about how the Western mind views these things versus the Eastern mind. Because in the West, we tend to look at things as though they need to be fixed or changed. To us, everything is an either-or situation. It's good or it's bad. It's vanilla or it's chocolate. It's left or it's right. And, you know, and so there must be something bad about this. We have to look for the good. But to the Asian mind, that's not how they really look at things. They look at things more globally. They understand that things are interconnected. So if you picture the globe of the Earth, you know, it has a North Pole and a South Pole. It can't possibly have a North Pole or a South Pole. It has both. And so I say that people, every emotion, every aspect, every characteristic that we have has both a front and a back. Mm-hmm. And because we're living stressed lives, we mostly express the back or the negative side, such as anger, if someone has bushy eyebrows. But if you look back, if you trace back to the origin of anger, what that really is a very healthy impulse to basically change what you see as wrong, to create positive change in the world, to break up the old, to make way for the new. And so if someone has very strong, bushy eyebrows, that means that a driving force in their life will be their desire to get out there and take action and make things better. It's only when they feel blocked or they feel judged or not good about themselves in some way that energy shows up in a destructive way, such as anger.
So every emotion has a positive, like fear. What would be the positive aspect to something like fear?
And this is a beautiful thing. I appreciate you bringing this up because, you know, when we feel fear, there's basically two reactions that we have. One reaction is that we get swept away in it. We get lost in it, and we're just lost in fear, and we struggle to come back to center to have some clear thinking, and that's not a healthy way to go. And the other very common reaction to fear is to immediately try to suppress it or run away from it or deny it. And that just, you know, packs it down in our bodies and into our cells and can eventually make us ill. But really what Chinese face reading says is the cure to fear, the answer, is actually within the fear. And that is your tremendous courage and your strength. That's the flip side of fear. That's the power. The Chinese talk about, you may have heard in Chinese culture, they talk about the importance of honoring the ancestors. You may have heard they have, you know, altars in their home and honor the ancestors. But that's really only part of the understanding. What the Chinese believe is that even after our ancestors have passed on, that they continue to beam blessings on us. They continue to support us. In the body that's associated with the organs of the kidneys, one kidney on either side of our lower back. And they look at that as though it's the hands of the ancestors behind us, supporting us and helping us and kind of downloading the strength, not just our strength, but the will and the strength of everyone who's come before us. And so when we have fear, then we need to turn to the courage of the ancestors, the wisdom of the ancestors, and allow that power to come into us to help us move through the fear and not run away from it.
I appreciate your spiritual perspective on all this because it kind of grounds the body in a sort of multidimensional way. It's very interesting.
That's lovely. Lovely way to put it.
Yeah. So if we look at a face, we talked about the eyebrows, but a face is, of course, it's pretty much, they all look the same in some ways. I have a joke. I was talking to my little nephew, I think he's 3 years old, and I was looking at our hands, and I said, you know, we have very similar hands. And he goes, because everybody does.
Well, everybody's got five fingers and a thumb, unless they've lost one along the way or grown an extra one.
And everyone has the same face, but within that, the variation in detail within eyebrows, yes, or shapes of eyes or noses, there's probably a billion different types of noses. Of course, there's similarities and lips. And so how does one equate, how do you find the detail or the distinction in that? And who decided that bushy eyebrows meant anger anyway?
Well, you know, I always say to people this is based on 3,000 years of research and development because that's, how ancient Chinese medicine is. So, and that's why I have such respect for it because it's not, some concept that somebody came up with in 1959 and says, eyebrows have to do with anger, that this has been developed and researched over time. First of all, let me say that, this isn't a cookie-cutter kind of thing. You can't look at someone's face or look at one feature on their face and know everything about them. I equate it to putting a jigsaw puzzle together. So, when you first start putting the puzzle together, a few pieces are down there and a picture slowly starts forming, but you really need to look at all the different pieces put together in order to see what the picture really is. And so when you read a face, you can get messages from each of the features and the wrinkles that develop. And by the way, there are certain wrinkles you are supposed to get. It's a very good thing to have certain kinds of wrinkles.
And so you develop, as
you read the face, a very deep understanding of who that person is, what they value, what their belief systems will tend to be, their patterns of perception, how they'll react to the rest of the world, many, many things. But you can actually get important information about someone just from one feature on their face. Now, the eyebrows are actually, in diagnosis, reflect the health of the liver and the gallbladder in the physical body. And, one of the functions of the liver is to process toxins in the body. But energetically and emotionally, the liver also processes toxic emotions. And so anger is probably the strongest and potentially the most toxic emotion. And so that's why it equates with the liver, because the liver can handle it. So if someone has strong eyebrows, that equates to strong emotional liver, which means they can handle anger. If someone has weak eyebrows, anger is probably not one of the emotions that they kind of bring up on a regular basis. They're just not attracted to it. Their system can't handle it.
Well, so how would you then just go about? I know you teach classes and weekends and probably week long, and you've been studying for a lifetime. But
yeah.
how do you go about just, you know, an introductory reading of the face? And I also want to say you are actually going to be doing a class Wednesday, February 23rd, online, a free 1-hour teleclass on face reading. And they can go to wisdomofyourface.com events.
Exactly. .html
to be a part of that online class. And that's your website, wisdomofyourface.com. So that's very exciting. But so as a general introduction, you'll probably cover this anyway, but, five things your face reveals to the world. Do you want to just touch upon those, or I mean?
Well, sure. I mean, you know, you referenced about how many years I've been studying this, and that can kind of be, you know, make people anxious, thinking, "Oh my gosh, I've got to study 30 years before I can do this." But I always joke that I studied 30 years so I can teach this to you in 2 days.
Wow.
It's really, it's fun and it's fascinating to learn. And in the free teleclass, what I'll be focusing on is some of the messages that your face is giving the world that might be useful for you to know about, but not in a fear-based way, like, oh my gosh, you know, this is a bad thing, but actually to know the messages that your face is communicating to the rest of the world, then you can build on those as strengths. You know, if you have strong eyebrows, certainly it means that under stress, feelings of anger will be more easy to come up, or at least frustration. But that also means many other things about you. Someone with strong eyebrows has tremendous drive. They can work hard. They can think hard. Really wonderful logical mind. They can be assertive and confident. If you have, for instance, women often, you know, pluck or wax their eyebrows. If a woman has naturally very strong eyebrows and she plucks them to too narrow a line, she can actually be impacting the quality of her assertiveness, her ability to be confident and stand up for herself. I had a woman recently in a workshop who was upset with her husband, and she said, you know, this man is a West Point graduate. He's worked for this company for 7 years. He's made the millions of dollars, and yet he cannot get the gumption up to march into his boss's office to ask for a raise. And I asked to see his picture, and she showed me his picture, and as she handed it to me, she said, oh, he's got alopecia. He's lost all his eyebrows in the last few years. He didn't, you know, he used to have big, bushy eyebrows. Well, so having lost his eyebrows, his confidence has been diminished. He doesn't feel as comfortable or as able to walk into the boss's office and ask for a raise.
Yeah, so if you, I mean, if you, I understand that association, but I was going to ask, how does, like, plucking one's eyebrows or changing one's features actually affect the inner being, you know, like beauty's
right,
only
right.
skin deep, but you're saying there actually is a causal effect in behavior and emotion based on our features. How do you explain it?
It's like your face is a reflection of who you are inside. Everything is interconnected. It's almost like feng shui. You know, they say in feng shui, you move the furniture around, you change your life. It's considered in face reading that you were born with the features that you have for a reason. And it can be incredibly powerful and meaningful for you to learn the messages that your face has for you, because they're all positive and they're all empowering. So if you alter your face, if you go in, it's like messing with a blueprint for a house. Unless you're an architect and you know what you're doing, you would never think of, you know, moving the electrical system over here and changing the front door over there without, you know, without consulting someone. But we arbitrarily kind of go in and mess with the face that we have. And sometimes it can really set our system off balance. It's quite remarkable. I mean, I've many stories about people making what they think is a minor change to their face I can share with you that really had results almost immediately in their lives.
Like a nose job or something.
Well, for instance, I had a client in a private session once, and she had a very strong horizontal line through her forehead. Now, in face reading, horizontal lines usually represent a life lesson that we've learned. They're very good things. And your face is also a map of your journey through life, so you can actually note where a marking is, like a wrinkle, and relate that to a certain time in your life. And on her face, that related to her mid-20s. And as it happened, in her mid-20s, she was in a severely abusive relationship and just got out of it, you know, with her life. And she said that that was such a major lesson for me that I knew I would never again be in an abusive relationship. And for the next 25 years, she never was. But then she started getting uncomfortable about her wrinkles. And she had that wrinkle on her forehead filled, so it disappeared. And within the next month, she was in an abusive relationship. She had to learn the lesson all over again.
Wow, because she filled that wrinkle.
Exactly. Now, It's not always that dramatic, but, you know, and I'm certainly, you know, I'm not saying you should never have anything cosmetic done to your face. It's totally everyone's choice, but it can be so helpful to know the meaning of what you're about to do.
Well, so you're saying people who do Botox and things like that, you don't recommend that?
Well, so again, you know, I need to say that we can't judge anybody for the choices that they make. What hurts my heart is if someone is cutting their face or doing something to it because they feel like they will be loved if they look different. To me, that's not a healthy choice, and that's often the reason people have some procedure done. But it's interesting with Botox. They did a study last year where they had a control group. This is a regular scientific study. What they found actually in terms of our faces is that when we see someone, whether it's a photo or it's a live face that's just walked into the room, for a fraction of a second, we match their facial expression. And at the same time we're doing that, the amygdala, the feeling center of the brain, floods our body with the matching emotion. So basically what that means is when we first see someone, we meet them in a place of empathy. We try to empathize with what they're feeling in that moment. But they found that when they Botox your face, you're not able to make that little micro expression when you first see the face, and the amygdala doesn't function either. You do not feel the emotion. There is no empathy. So it can have quite amazing impact on our relationships and our ability to relate to other people.
Wow, it's like the mirror neurons, you're saying.
Exactly.
Wow, that is fascinating. Because the first thing we cognize as a child is the face, our mother's face, or face in general.
And, you know, that's lifelong. They've found that within 1/10 of a second of seeing a face, we've already made a judgment about who that person is and what our experience is going to be like with them. Faces are extremely important to us.
So in a way, you're saying, and the thing about revealing yourself to the world, in a way, everybody really knows how to do face readings instinctively.
We all read and react to faces all the time. And if we were all clear channels and completely emotionally balanced, then we would be reacting in a healthy way. But we all come equipped with a big, long history and our own stories, and thick layers of belief systems. So we're viewing other people through those layers, and so we don't always make a clear judgment. It can be really helpful to know how our faces are affecting other people, how they're likely to interpret who we are, or rather misinterpret who we are. So for instance, there's a certain kind of eyebrows that I call Queen's eyebrows, and these are eyebrows that are very high above the eyes. There's a lot of distance between the eyes and the eyebrows. And there's nothing wrong with Queen's eyebrows. It actually means someone who has excellent taste and is highly sensitive. But many people, when they see a face with Queen's eyebrows, they feel very intimidated because their first sense is that they're not going to be good enough for that person. That person may be a little bit cold or aloof. And they can actually be a little bit aloof because they're so sensitive. They hold themselves back a little bit. But it's not because they're unfriendly or judgmental. It's because they're so sensitive. And so that can be a misread of the messages that can prevent you from creating rapport with someone right from the beginning.
Well,
so someone with
me...
Queen's eyebrows may need to overcompensate in terms of warmth or friendliness on first meeting people because they're aware that people can be reacting in a negative way just to their eyebrows.
But that gets me into a really big topic and question is the whole idea of cultures and races and even families. I mean, there's this, you know, there's a tendency of families to look to look alike. And
absolutely.
Also,
and, you know,
racist.
I often have a wife bring her very left-brained engineer skeptical husband to one of my talks, and he's sitting in the back with his arms crossed, and within a few minutes, you know, he raises his hand and basically says, "This is a bunch of baloney. I have this nose because my father had this nose. It's just genetics." And my answer to that is, you're absolutely right. Absolutely. You inherited that nose down through your family lines from your father. You have that nose because your father had that nose. But you also have the personality characteristics that accompany that nose that you've also inherited. So there's no contradiction here. It makes perfect sense with science. It's just additional information.
But in cultures, you're talking about the queen's eyebrow. If you look at the ancient Egyptian art, they sort of had those. And if you go to Egypt, you still see the kind of wide-eyed and those high eyebrows in a way. Because the Egyptian race was separate from the Arab race. And when the Arabs came in, they mixed some of the population. But you can still see that pure Egyptian genetics in some of the people there.
But I have Egyptian clients, and not all of them have those kinds of eyebrows. And so those that do will have that quality as part of their personality. But again, that's just one small aspect of who they are. But not all of them do.
Well, what about races like black, Asian, white? Does that make a difference?
It does. And the first thing to understand is that these are universal principles. You know, like you said earlier, everybody has a face. It's all pretty much the same. A lot of times people think Chinese face reading, well, that must just allow you to read Chinese faces, but that's not the case. However, you do need to take into consideration ethnic background, racial background. So just, you know, very generally, for instance, you know, white people, Caucasians, often have very thin lips. And Asian, African faces, some other ethnic backgrounds have fuller lips. So it is important to know someone's racial background in order to know how much weight to give very full lips. If I see a Caucasian person with very, very full lips, I'll pay more attention to that than if I'm seeing a Southern Asian face or an African face with full lips. In that case, I'll take, you know, the size of the lips within the context of what I'd normally expect in that kind of face.
Does that represent, in like a Caucasian person, would that, in a woman, let's say, would that represent a very sensual person like people think?
No, that's way too simplistic. The mouth actually is an incredibly important feature on the face. It can tell us so much. But the basic understanding that people have about face reading, if they have anything at all, is cartoonish, and it's not so. I mean, sometimes people with a very full mouth and a large mouth are people who enjoy all the pleasures on earth. And that's, you know, can be sex, it can be great food, it can be comfortable surroundings, a beautiful home. And people with thin lips, they say, you know, in very broadly, often have fewer ways to enjoy all the pleasures of earth. But the interesting thing is that they say that type A personalities tend to lose their lips, that we hold our stress and our tension, our mouths tense up with all the stress that we're going through, and so our lips become thin if we're workaholics and overstressed. But if we're overstressed, then we're not enjoying life, and so thus the thin lips. So it all kind of connects.
Oh, so you're saying, though, there is something to a full-bodied lip or mouth thing. It's enjoying all the pleasures of life, that kind of
thing.
Yeah,
I mean, the mouth relates to the archetype of the mother. And that can, you know, has a lot of levels of meaning. So one thing that the mouth tells us is how safe we feel in the world overall, how much home is important to us, how much we value relationships and family and connections, what our original relationship was like with our mother, and our mouth can even tell us, you know, what the current balance of giving and receiving is in our lives at this current moment. You can read by wrinkles that develop around the mouth if someone's been overgiving in life, taking care of everybody else, and they've just dropped off their own to-do list. And so by reading the face, you can actually see kind of your patterns of where you may kind of fall off the wagon and how to come back into balance, how to empower yourself again, slightly different choices to make so that you're not stressed and so you can enjoy your life.
But how would you do that? Or how would you not?
Okay, so I'll give you an example.
Please,
you know, often, especially for women, as they get into their 40s and 50s, they start to notice that they're developing little vertical lines above their upper lips. very common, especially for women in Western culture. And this is a sign that in some way they really have dropped off their own to-do list. You know, often by that time in their lives, if they're wives and mothers, you know, they're chauffeur to the kids, they're driving them to soccer games, they're making four different kinds of dinner because people are picky or they're eating at different times, they're up till midnight doing their laundry and the paperwork, and the baby cries at 3 and they still have to get up. They're always on call. And so they've lost the awareness that they need to have time for themselves. When those lines develop above the upper lip, that's a sign that they've overgiven to the point that their disappointment in their lives, their feeling deprived and undernourished for their own lives has gotten to the point where they've gotten stuck in life. And it's what I call an early warning sign. It's really a gift, those little wrinkles, because it shows you what's happened. And basically the homework to do in that case is, you know, to look at your life and see how you may have been giving, and not either asking for what you want or receiving, or if no one's shown up to give it to you, how about being your own best friend and give it to yourself? That now's the time to be selfish. And that can be in small ways. That can mean, you know, giving yourself a day off a week that's just for you, or a massage, or going back to school, or whatever it is that you know you need to feel fully nourished in life now.
So if someone is giving themselves that and is feeling thoroughly nourished, would the lines start to disappear?
That's the really incredible thing, because I get emails all the time within about 2 months of a workshop happening. I get emails from people saying, after I learned the meaning of those wrinkles on my face, I made a few small changes in my everyday life. I woke up this morning, I looked in the mirror, and the wrinkles are gone. So, you know, the point of my work is not to get rid of wrinkles, but when wrinkles are signs that your life is out of balance, then it's a wonderful sign. It shows you that you're on the right track, and I can save you thousands of dollars in plastic surgery.
Wow.
Just by understanding what these messages are.
That's incredible. But you also said some wrinkles we need. And what are those?
Okay, so some examples. What we call crow's feet in the Western world, the Chinese call joy lines, those little wrinkles that come out from the sides of your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
They're supposed to, we all need joy lines. These are lines we're supposed to grow because it's a sign of someone who has an open heart, that they will be affectionate, that they will be warm. And these are actually unconscious messages that other people read and react to on our faces as well. We feel attracted to people who have joy lines. The interesting thing is that they found in research that when you smile a genuine smile, it involves both the muscles around your mouth and around your eyes that create those joy lines. If you fake a smile, you can't voluntarily move those muscles around your eyes. So someone who has joy lines is someone who genuinely smiles frequently.
Really? Huh.
This is what we want.
And that's a kind of open invitation, a friendly soul. I mean, it seems like there's an intuitive knowing that the Chinese tapped into and in understanding this technology, but we all... If you just, I guess your course is to kind of direct us to what we actually already know and for maybe new discoveries to be made about the face as well.
Well, exactly. And you know, unfortunately in the Western world, we're all in such judgment of how we look. And, you know, when I first learned this work, which was when I married into a Chinese family 30 years ago, and my Chinese mother-in-law started to teach it to me, I found it absolutely abhorrent, the concept that you would judge someone based on their appearance. How awful is that? It wasn't until much later when I began to study the deeper principles that helped me understand that it was basically the opposite about that. It was not about judgment, but it was about compassion and being able to not go into reaction to whoever walked in the door, but to understand, you know, who they really were and to establish a loving relationship with them. So unfortunately, especially for women, but also for men, you know, we look in the mirror and cringe. We've always hated our nose. We've always hated the ears that stick out. Oh, my God, we've got a new wrinkle. But when people come to the workshop, they walk out of there just, you know, 10 inches taller and all lit up because suddenly they've discovered the meaning of the sticking out ears. I was just giving a talk in San Francisco a few days ago, and at the end of my talk, I gave some demonstrations for audience volunteers. And a beautiful man came up and stood in front to have his face read. And one thing about his face was that he had very, very large ears. And one of the things that that means in face reading is that someone has in deep inner resources, a very strong constitution, a strength and a willpower to get through difficult times. And this man was very moved to learn that because he said that he had been HIV positive for 25 years, and yet he'd never been ill. And he'd always had a feeling that it was his own inner strength, his own strong constitution and will that had carried him through. And it was such an empowering and affirming thing for him to hear that, in fact, that's what face reading would have said.
Well, the ears do reflect the kidneys, and their kidneys reflect the constitution.
Right.
And so you're making it sort of an emotional analogy to that as well.
Exactly.
Right. So are there things you've discovered, I mean, I'm sure, because you've put it together in your own way, that were new to Chinese face reading, that you put together, you know?
Well, I mean, what I found in traditional classical Chinese face reading is that it's mostly very negative. A lot of my Chinese clients and Chinese students who come to workshops actually had to force themselves to come. I often hear that when they were younger, their parents had taken them to the face reader, and it was literally the worst experience of their lives because they came out feeling so bad about themselves. But that's an aspect of Chinese culture, because in Chinese culture, they believe that you criticize the person to make them better, and you talk about what's wrong with them to motivate them to get better. And I, you know, in Western culture, and certainly my own opinion is that, you know, especially for a child, it's better to raise a child with praise rather than criticism. So I often find that, you know, what's different about my work is that it's not about Sally Sunshine and making everything nice, but it's understanding that even what's on your face that reveals to you your challenges and why they are challenges for you, it also reveals how you can transform that there's an alchemical process you can use to transform what's been challenging for you actually into your greatest strength. And I don't think that Chinese face reading these days, at least, the level that it's practiced at in most cases really touches that kind of depth.
Well, give me another example of that challenging and transformation, that alchemical into our strength.
Well, so, you know, a story that's coming to mind that may not fit that exactly, but it's an interesting story about a temporary change to someone's face, because a lot of times people think that it's just the permanent stuff. But even temporary things can give us quite profound information about what we should really be focusing on. I was interviewed by a journalist about a year or so ago for a magazine, and we had a wonderful interview. She was a very intelligent, brilliant woman. We talked for a long time, and just as we were ending the call, she said, "Oh, wait a minute, can I ask you a question about my own face?" And I said, "Sure." And she said, "You know, it's the strangest thing. About 3 months ago, suddenly, out of the blue, my under eyes suddenly became very dark. At one point, it was almost like I had two black eyes. They were so, you know, looking almost bruised." And she said, "It's lasted and lasted. I finally went to the doctor, and they couldn't find anything wrong and just patted me on the head and said they were sure it would go away eventually." And she said, "Does Chinese face reading have anything to say about that?" And what I told her was that, you know, any sign on the face can basically have three different meanings. It can have to do with your physical health. It can have to do with a time in your life. Or it can have to do with some aspect of your emotional nature. And so I said to her, you know, in terms of physical health, darkness in the under eyes is usually associated with dehydration and exhaustion. In terms of time of life, darkness in the under eyes would have to do with the decade of your 30s. So maybe there was something that happened in your 30s that's coming up for you again right now. And lastly, in terms of emotional nature, darkness in the under eyes is called unshed tears. And so what that means is that there's some old hurt, some old tears that are coming up to be shed for some reason.
And did that help her? Yes.
Well, and so there was quite a pause, and then she said, "Okay, can I tell you?" And she said, "3 months ago, my nephew committed suicide. I had to drop everything and fly home to Europe to be with my sister. I arrived dehydrated and exhausted, and I stayed that way for the next several weeks as long as I was there." She said, "That much I'd pretty much figured out. But she said, my sister and I were pregnant together in our 30s, but my baby died.
And
so what was really happening was not only was she dealing with the grief about her nephew, but what was coming up was the grief for the loss of her own baby. 2 weeks later, she called me and said since that experience, she'd been consciously grieving. She'd been crying the unshed tears, and the dark circles under her eyes were now gone.
Wow, that's beautiful. That's a great story. Yeah, I can see. So it's like another level of self-help, potentializing or acknowledging who we are and what we're feeling is what you're also helping people understand. So
And you know, my second book, which came out last summer, is called The Wisdom of Your Child's Face, and it was quite a revelation for me to write, because it's for parents to read their children's faces so they can help them flourish in the best way for them. It was quite interesting for me because I did a lot of research in the latest theories about child development. And one surprising thing that I found was that, you know, when you think about what's the most important thing that you can do to ensure your child's success in life, you might think, well, that's, you know, praising them a lot or telling them I love you a lot. And, of course, those things are very important. But what they found in their research was that the single most important predictor of your child's happiness and success in life is how much they feel recognized by you. And I don't think that ends in childhood. I think we all want to feel truly seen. We all want to feel recognized and accepted. And I think that that's what this work can do for each of us, whether it's looking at that image in the mirror or, you know, looking at whoever's walking into the door.
No, that's really good. It feels like more you're talking how important your work is and how you should be in schools, in elementary schools, talking to children and parents.
I've heard that more than once. I know.
Well, let's see what we can do. No, because it doesn't seem just the title, Chinese Face Reading. But, of course, having met you and experience, I know that it's important. And I know it's like you're giving people a secret map to themselves. I mean, you've
exactly.
said that.
Exactly.
And to the world. And it's very exciting. So we have a couple more minutes. So you went over the mouth. Now, what does the nose and the eyes mean? Well, first the nose, generally. I mean.
Sure. Okay. So one thing the nose represents is what your life experience has been or will be in the decade of your 40s. Every feature of your face is said to represent about one decade of your life. And so the nose can be read in terms of what's important for you to focus on. In general, the homework that people need to do in their 40s is to start to live more authentically, to start to create a more meaningful life, to be more true to themselves. This is a decade when people are often focused on career and finally achieving in career some success or more success than they had before, and refining their vision of who they are and really what they're doing here. And so the Chinese call that a yang time, where they're more externally focused. If we back up a little bit to the eyes, that's a very different time of life. That's the decade of the 30s.
And all right, so you go down the face again. Like the forehead is the 20s, the eyes are the 30s, the nose are the 40s, the mouth are the 50s, the chin is the 60s. Is that it?
Very good. Yeah, you start with the ears. So the ears represent childhood. And then the hairline is adolescence. The forehead is the 20s. Eyes are 30s, nose are 40s, mouth is 50s, as you said, 60s is the chin, 70s is the jaw, 80s goes up one side of the face, 90s comes down the other. There are maps in my book so people can see. Now, that's not everything that those features mean. That's just relating to periods of life, but the features also have to do with personality traits.
Right, but the eyes are probably the most amazing parts of a person's face, the sparkle, the light, and they're so different, and you know, so how do you read that?
Yeah, and so the eyes are said to relate to the emotional heart, and it's interesting because the Chinese believe that our consciousness does not reside in our brain, it resides in our hearts, and so you can see the clarity of someone's consciousness and the openness of their heart by looking at the light and clarity in their eyes.
So
you also look at how wide held the eyes are. If the eyes are held very wide open, that means sometimes too open a heart, someone who's too vulnerable emotionally.
Oh, And what about just, you know, sparkling eyes or very white, clear, the clarity? I guess it's all about the feeling about the clarity that's coming through that heart space, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's many ways to read it. So you read the light, or what the Chinese call the shen, and the clarity in the light. If you're looking at the whites of the eyes, that actually doesn't relate to the heart. That actually relates to the health of the liver as well. So you can kind of, you know, you get into little details, but that isn't even all that important. You know, if you see someone with a twinkle in their eyes, usually you expect them to have a good sense of humor, to be friendly, to be a little bit outgoing, and that's what Chinese face reading would say about someone with that extra sparkle.
Mm. So in this course that's coming up, these five things that you're going to reveal to the world about their face, what else will we expect to find from that course that's happening this Wednesday?
Yeah. Well, I'm known for being really generous with information, so five is probably too small a number. I'm going to try to pack in as much information as I can in 1 hour as possible to help people really understand.
What can we take away? I mean, because, of course, it's on the radio, and so how will we be able to understand ourselves better from that?
Yeah, you know, you think, oh, gosh, this is so visual. How can she do this on a teleconference? But actually, it's quite amazing how much you can talk about and discuss about, just as we've been doing, about the meanings of different features and large versus small, you know, certain kinds of wrinkles. They all have messages. So I'll cover as much as I can about every aspect of the face in the space of an hour.
All right, every aspect. And then will we be able to look at ourselves and understand, I mean... And also from
well,
what
you know,
said,
I'm good, but I'm not so good to teach face reading in an hour. It does take a couple of days, but you'll certainly be able to look in the mirror and probably recognize at least a few things that I've talked about and relate to what I said the meaning was.
Well, let's, like, just right here, if I was to look, or someone listening was to just look in the mirror at themselves, what would you suggest, just as a really simple exercise, what to look for, what to notice?
Yeah, I mean, one of the easiest ways to start to play with face reading is just to look at your face or someone else's face. Usually it's easier to read somebody else's face because you're so used to your own. But look at what feature really stands out, a feature that's really large or a feature that's really small or a wrinkle that is unusual and catches your attention. And so I'll be talking about the meanings of the sizes of the features or the wrinkles, and so you can recognize them in who you are or in somebody that you know.
But does that mean something's out of balance if something's extremely large, or is it balanced for their life and themselves, you know?
Very good point. No, it doesn't mean something's out of balance. It's that everybody is fine the way that they are. The only problem is they don't think they are. And so they're judging themselves and they're out of balance. So every face is perfect and beautiful, and you come to recognize that once you learn how to read the messages that it expresses.
I mean, you never saw a face you didn't like, right?
Well, faces of people who are crazy, and you can learn to read that. You know, serial killers, things like that, you can learn to read those people.
Can you actually pick out a serial killer by their face?
Yeah.
Just by certain features?
It's not the features, as we were saying a minute ago, it's the light in the eyes. There's something really, really, really wrong with the light in their eyes.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I mean, and that's that whole intuitive mirroring that I think we instinctively are aware of. So in a way, I you're also saying for people to trust their intuition and feelings about people they meet, too, and people
I find that a lot of people think they're using their intuition, but there's a lot of judgment mixed in. And what I find with this work is that the more you learn to understand what your own face is saying, the more comfortable you are in your own skin, and that relaxes you so that your intuition can flow freely. When we're stressed, when we're in self-judgment, those lines are tightened. There's tension in the wires there. And your intuitive knowing gets all mixed up with your judgment and your fears and your reactions to people. And so you don't get clear information all the time. But as you can feel, you know, more comfortable with yourself, then all of a sudden there's much less of that happening, and you just have that knowing show up much more easily.
So in your weekend classes, people come in, And do they take a whole bunch of notes that they have to memorize? And...
No. What I do is I show all these great pictures, and we laugh and laugh and cry, and then we get up and read faces, and people's heads blow off, and they're, you know, most people say, why isn't this taught in the schools? And, oh, my God, that's my husband, or that's why my mother treated me this way. And it's a fun experience. It's not a classroom kind of thing where you're scribbling frantically.
Wow. I wonder what's in your face that makes you such a good face person.
How much time do we have?
Well, what do you notice in your face? Because I know what you look like.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that my face says is that I'm really, really good at noticing tiny little nuances and details and patterns. And so...
Where does it say that in your face? Like, which part?
Several different things put together. So I have a large nose. I have a certain kind of cheek. I'm very pale. There's several factors that add up on my face. It's not just any one thing. But put all together, it makes me very, very empathic. It makes me notice subtleties. And so it allows me to also communicate and kind of refine this information so it's very, very accessible and practical.
Oh, I see. So the way you're describing your combination of features sort of makes it, in a way, like an astrological reading where you're looking at different aspects and you're creating a sort of a story about putting it all together.
That's a lovely way to put it.
Yeah, and then you're kind of, and seeing how different aspects complement each other and create more power in certain areas of your life. And it's like a Chinese formula as well, Chinese herbal formula, where there's a main ingredient, there's, other ingredients that's kind of help the main ingredient along.
Oh, that's lovely. I just love that. That's beautiful.
Yeah, it just came to me. So I understand it a little better. And you sort of teach that maybe not all in one weekend, but eventually people will know. And it's so useful. I would say going on job interviews potential partners, right?
Right.
I mean, what?
Online dating.
Online dating, if they show you a true picture. What should I look for in a partner?
That's right. Well, and you'll never be bored again. I spend a lot of time in airports, and it comes in very handy.
We'll have to do that together.
Okay, it's a deal.
But, all right, maybe you can offline give me a reading at some point.
I'd love to.
And what I should look for in partner, whatever. But thank you, Jean.
Oh, thank you, Alan, so much. This was lovely. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Are you coming to New York soon?
I'm not scheduled to be there anytime soon, but maybe that'll change, and maybe this fall.
Yeah, maybe I can help set something up for you in New York. You know?
Oh, that'd be wonderful. I love New York.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people, I think, who would just really enjoy what you're offering here. It's really fascinating. The way you talk about it and the excitement you have with it, you know. I think I would love to have you back here sometime.
Thank you. I would love to be there. So we'll put that little seed in the ground and see what happens.
Okay. So how do you say your last name again?
How do I say it or how do I spell it?
Well, how do you spell it?
H-A-N-E-R. Haner.
Haner. Jean Haner. TheWisdomOfYourFace.com. She's an incredible teacher about Chinese facial diagnosis. And it's not diagnosis. It's what?
I just call it face reading. And actually, the website is just WisdomOfYourFace.com.
WisdomOfYourFace.com. And she's having a free teleseminar Wednesday, February 23rd, 2011 on WisdomOfYourFace.com. What's the rest of how they just find it by going to your website, right?
Yeah, going to the events page on the website. It's all listed there what number to call.
Well, I really enjoyed this conversation.
Thank you so much. Me too. You're wonderful.
Yeah, we'll be in touch. And you have my number too, right?
I think so.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Jean.
Thank you, Alan.
Thanks. I'll be in touch.
Thanks.
End with this music called The Song of the Soul. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. If you want to reach me, email me at newrealities@earthlink.net and check my website, newrealities.com. Thank you. This is Chris Williamson and The Song of the Soul.
No sadness, only a song of the soul. And you sing this song on fire, to sing along, and we sing for a long, long time. Why don't you sing this song on fire, to sing?